I until I met my wife, like I wish that's ability I had. I mean, I'm sure if I had it now and I saw my and I expressed to my wife every day, she'd still be beautiful as I see her every day, regardless. But I mean, it's just that it's something that everybody should have. Because like
Absolutely.
if we saw people who were on the inside, we wouldn't get fooled so many times by these snakes in the bushes and whatnot.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. My guest for this episode is Jeremy Bryant. Jeremy is a father and husband who loves to get his opinions out there on four podcasts. You can check out his paranormal side on Paranormal The New Normal, or his musical side on Maniacal Music Musings. Be sure to also catch him on Bracket Bastards, most Sundays at 3 p.m. USA Eastern Time, and The Asylum with Harley and the Joker, every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Now here's our interview with Jeremy. So welcome to My Movie Story, Jeremy. How you going?
I'm doing good. Glad to be here. Always glad to talk about some movies that I love.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And all the way from America, whereabouts in the States are you again, Jeremy?
I am on the northern East Coast. So I am right now dealing with rain and snow, but
lovely. Yeah. Well, I hate to tell you this, but it's going to be warm and sunny in Melbourne today and 30 degrees Celsius, which I think is about, I don't know, 85, 90 degrees or something. So we're on opposite ends here.
It's funny because me and my wife have talked about moving to Australia before, and like, I don't want to for the creatures alone, but I mean, kangaroos try to freaking drown you, so come on now. But
yeah, look, you know, we do have some dangerous animals. I'm not going to lie,
and I mean,
they don't attack you the second you walk off the plane. I'll just make that clear. You've got to go.
I would hope, but I also don't want to run into a bunyip or a yowie or any of those creatures as a paranormal lover. I don't want to run into any of those creatures.
Yeah, you'd have to go really out to the outback to see any of those. So you're pretty safe where we live in, you know, the suburban areas. So you'll be all right. A few possums at night, you know, who like to hiss at you and things like that. But you know, that's about it. You know, we're pretty safe.
Oh, here. We got those here and worse in our backyard. So it's all good. I got freaking black bears in my backyard. So
oh geez, wow, yeah, that close. That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. And you do a few podcasts as well. We were just talking about that before. So tell us a bit about the podcast and some of the things you talk about, Jeremy.
Well, I am a multi-podcaster. I host Paranormal The New Normal, which is my paranormal interview show where I talk to mediums, psychics, pet psychics, starseeds, which are people who have extraterrestrial alien spirits inside them.
Wow.
I also talk to paranormal investigators who try to talk to spirits and ghosts on a regular basis, or deal with demons or shadow people. So, and of course, we get into the cryptids too, the Bigfoot, the Yowie, the Jersey Devil, the Dogman, all the fun of it. So
cool.
And of course, if you want a little more comical side of life, you can check out Maniacal Music Musings, where we bring three albums to every episode and we talk about those albums, and it gets funny, it gets insulting because we go at each other for picking the albums we did. And we also do on both those shows, we do brackets regularly, either one-on-one with me and a guest, or seven people brackets where we break down 32 to 36 or more different items of a topic, and we try to pick a winner. It's interesting, it's funny, cool. It's fun, it just,
yeah.
I'm also a panelist on Bracket Bastards, the great podcast I started on, where we break down a bracket of 32, 64 or more, and we basically just pick a winner. Same thing as the brackets on my show. It's where the idea came from, but it's just a fun time. We just did a Sweet 16 this last week at Tim Curry Movies. That was freaking fun as could be. And the one that won is not exactly one that should have won, but we were having fun and we were being bastards and we went with it. So, and the last show I'm on is Global Strangeness. It's a paranormal discussion podcast where me and my two to three co-hosts like to just talk about a different topic every week. And we go in depth. We find stuff on the internet of stories and whatnot. And ridiculous things. We get comic too, of course, because my co-hosts like to drink. I can't say I do, but my co-hosts like to drink. So I mean, it's just, we have fun with it. It's live every Sunday at 9 o'clock. You can check it on my pages that you hear about later, or you can check it on a lot of different pages. I'm sure that my good friend here, Brian, will put them in the links for all that in the description. So I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. For anyone watching this video podcast, the links are appearing on your screen right now. And anyone who's listening will put the links in the show notes so you can check out Jeremy's collection of podcasts. And he's a podcast aficionado, that's for sure. Something for everyone there. Sounds great. Yeah. And here we're talking about movies today. And I know you talk about movies on other podcasts as well. But this one's a little different because these are the three films that are unique to you. And the story behind why. And, you know, prior to recording this episode, we've chatted back and forth, and we've got three really vastly different films here. So a couple of which I hadn't seen before, and I went and watched those. So that was entertaining. Very different films. Couple of comedies, one that's, you know, I'm not going to spoil it. I'll let you introduce what they are. But yeah, something for everyone. So I thought we might start with, Jeremy, your film that changed your perspective in some way. And in whatever way that was for you, you know, whether it was about seeing people differently, seeing the world differently. Everyone has a very sort of personal film in this category, and, you know, rightly so. It is about something that's had an impact on you. So, yeah, I'll let you tell our listeners and watchers what that film is. And, yeah, just maybe set it up for us.
Sure. That film that really had an impact on my life, and some people might laugh at this even, but that film is Shallow Hal.
In a comedy of gigantic proportions.
What in the... You want to see a splash? I'm going to show you a splash. Ready?
Hey, Billy, stay over near the ladder.
Shallow Hal.
Billy? Billy?
Billy! Daddy!
That movie changed my life completely. So,
wow. Yep.
I don't know if you want me to go fully into that yet, but
I will definitely get to that. Yeah, definitely. And this is an early Jack Black leading role, 2001, I think it was. Jack Black and Gwyneth Paltrow. So we'll have some listeners here who may not have seen it. So can you tell us a bit about Shallow Hal? What's it all about?
Shallow Hal is basically about a man that is very superficial, and even though he's not the greatest looking man in the world, he thinks he is, and he is very superficial about the type of women that he will be with in a romantic way or any other way. And he meets famed psychic Tony Robbins in an elevator, and basically they get stuck in the elevator and he starts to unravel, and Tony Robbins does a little magic on him and makes him see women for what they are on the inside rather than the outside. So he meets Gwyneth Paltrow in a fat suit, basically, and she's a big girl, she's a BBW by far, and I mean, just throughout the movie he learns that, like, he loves this girl. He doesn't see her as anything but the skinny, cute Gwyneth Paltrow we all know and love.
Yep.
And when the spell finally wears off, he eventually sees, spoilers, Gwyneth Paltrow is the BBW big chick she really is.
Yeah.
And there's some funny scenes, we'll get to in a moment about that, but basically, like, he tries to act like he was hypnotized this whole time, and he tried to act like that he doesn't want to be with her because of that, and he eventually realizes that he really loves her, and it doesn't matter what size she is, that love can come in all shapes and forms, and doesn't freaking matter. I mean,
that's it.
As we say on Bracket Bastards, we don't kink shame over here. So
beauty's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? That's kind of the message.
That's the message I will hold to the end of my life.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and we'll talk a bit about Jack Black as well, but we'll just backtrack a little bit, because the whole premise of this film is that he meets Tony Robbins. Most people have heard of Tony Robbins, right? So Tony Robbins is playing himself in this film. So tell us a little bit about, I guess, that interaction that they have. And, you know, is that what Tony Robbins does, in your opinion? Is it more of an exaggerated version of what he does? Like, what can you tell us about it?
I What I can say is that, I mean, Tony Robbins really isn't a thing anymore, at least in America. Like, Tony Robbins isn't really a person anymore that people talk about. But in the early 2000s, everybody knew who the fuck Tony Robbins was. Everybody knows who this guy was. And yep. He was a famed hypnotist slash psychiatrist. And basically, he meets Jack Black in a elevator. And Jack Black's like, oh, you're Tony Robbins. You're like, I know you. And when the elevator breaks down, like, they basically are in there, stuck in there for a couple hours. And Jack Black kind of unleashes like his inner self. And he's just like, I have some issues. And basically, Tony Robbins, before the elevator starts working again, just puts a little spell on them that makes them see people for who they are on the inside rather than the outside, which is something I wish we could, I honestly wish that's a vision we all had.
Yeah.
Imagine how much better life would be. Imagine how many fewer divorces there'd be we could see people for who they were on the inside rather than the outside. And this came out in 2001. So I may have not seen it in 2001. I may have seen it in like 2003, 2004, but because it was on HBO or Cinemax back in the day, and I used to watch it constantly.
Yep.
But so, I mean, as a superficial high schooler, then, I'm not going to get you wrong, I was a 300-plus-pound big fat boy. There was no denying that back then. There's no denying it. I mean, I'm like 280 now because I had surgery to fix all that. But
right.
I'm a fat boy. There's no definitely denying that. I'm happily married with kids and everything else now. But for a long time, in high school, I thought, I ain't dating no fat chicks. I don't want no fatty. And like, that's just, I hate who I was back then. I hated who I was. I hated it back then. I just didn't realize it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Seeing Shallow Hal, watching this movie so many times on HBO, Cinemax, whatever it was on, eventually FX, I'm pretty sure. But it just, it taught me that, you know what? You can love somebody and it has nothing to do with what they look like. It has absolutely nothing to do with what this person looks like. You love them for who they are inside. You love them for their personality. You love them for their emotional depth. You love them for their intelligence. Like, there are other things you can find in a person. And I mean, this was literally a point in my life where I almost became I would only date, I would only hook up with BBWs. I liked big girls. Like, that's the kind of guy I became. This movie had a huge impact in that because it just did. And I mean, oh my God. The scene where Gwyneth Paltrow takes off her underwear and throws it at him. She takes off her panties and throws it at Jack Black, and they're fucking huge. And he's like, how does this work?
That's right. Because he sees her as this beautiful, slim, petite,
he sees her as we all see Gwyneth Paltrow on a daily freaking basis before she did this whole goop shit and went crazy. But I mean, he saw her as we all saw her in the 2000s as this beautiful actress. And I mean, just the him not understanding why she breaks chairs or why she takes off underwear that looks like it's 20 sizes bigger than it should be for her. Like, it's just it's comedy. There's comedy in this movie, folks, and it's Jack Black, so you know there's comedy. I mean,
absolutely.
It was during his golden era of movies, like back in the early 2000s, in his School Rock, Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny, and
all that stuff.
Saving Silverman, like all those great movies where he was like a leading actor and he did an amazing job in all of them.
Definitely. Yeah, so it was definitely the golden era of Jack Black. He had all those films. He was just cranking them out, you know, and he was really, he played all these supporting roles in the 90s. You know, he kind of had this reputation as the sidekick in the film who got killed or, you know, humiliated himself in some way. And then he becomes this kind of leading man. And yeah, this is definitely one of his probably better films, I reckon. And, you know, he plays the goofy guy who's trying to hit on all these women. But then when he, you know, realizes who his partner really is, and he acts pretty well. You know, he shows that sort of dramatic side as well towards the end. So it was a pretty good performance all around, I thought.
It was a great performance. I mean, this is someone who, like, Jack Black, the earliest thing I've ever seen him on, I think, was the episode of The X-Files with Seth Green.
But I think
that's the earliest thing I ever saw him on. And I mean, I grew up watching him in Saving Silverman, of course, because that movie I've seen a thousand times too. It's a great movie. And he plays one of the secondary characters, but he's still a main character in that movie.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I mean, he's a great actor. I actually was just talking about Tropic Thunder on another podcast I was on with him.
Yeah.
And I mean, he plays an amazing job in that role as well, even though he's surrounded by stars. Like he probably is the least star-studded actor in the main roles in that movie, and he still does an amazing job. So
he was pretty good in King Kong as well. The Peter Jackson one.
I saw that King Kong in theaters, I'm pretty sure, and I did enjoy it immensely. I mean, it's nowhere as good as Skull Island or Kong vs. Godzilla nowadays, but I mean, it's comparing oranges and apples, really, in my opinion. But
yeah.
I mean, Jack Black did a great job in that movie. He Jack Black never disappoints me. That's the thing. School of Rock too. I've probably seen that movie 50 times at least. I mean, so many of the kids in that movie became famous actors because of that movie. So
absolutely,
And I mean, I love all the as a music lover, as obvious since I have a music podcast, like that movie has a lot of freaking hits in it. Like, and it the original song they do is freaking amazing. Like, it's just
so cool. That big concert item at the end for sure. Yeah.
And the fact that Jack Black is a musician, and that he has people on, like, there's one, I don't know if you've seen him, but there's one guy on Facebook Reels, TikTok, that sounds exactly like him. He's a big mulatto guy with curly hair, and he has a band, and they sound exactly like Tenacious D when he sings. Yeah. And he's done like Long Way to the Top, When You Want to Rock and Roll, and whatnot. And like, it sounds exactly like Jack. And like, he even did the song from the beginning of Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny. And he actually got Jack Black. He got Jack Black to collab with him on it, like on a TikTok, and like, Jack Black is singing along with him because his voice is so perfect it matches to his. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
I mean, the fact this man's a musician, an actor, and just an amazing person overall. Like, he's, no one's ever said a bad thing about him.
No, I'm pretty sure.
I haven't heard one story where Jack Black's a dick or Jack Black's an asshole because of this. Like, I've never heard that about him.
I think he loves what he does, and he just has a fun time doing it. Yeah. You can tell.
Oh, I love Jack Black. I mean, his Facebook page is hilarious. The reels he puts out are freaking hilarious, of like him in a bikini, freaking like him in bikini shorts, like a freaking G-string doing shit by his pool. It's just so hilarious because he's not a small guy, and it just gives everybody else in the world confidence.
Yeah, he's great. He's fantastic. And just come back to the movie for a second. So you've kind of set up the plot, and then, you know, he meets Tony Robbins, and he puts someone under this kind of, I guess, trance or something. That kind of wears off. He sees, you know, he's I forget the name of the girl that Gwyneth Paltrow plays.
Rosemary. How the hell I forget that?
Yeah, that was on the tip of my tongue. Yeah. So then, obviously, then he sees Rosemary for who she really is and all of that. And then he kind of has to make this choice at the end, doesn't he? Without sort of giving too much away. So, do you have a particular scene from the film that's a standout for you, like a favorite scene or a moment?
I mean, honestly, as a man who likes to stand up for his woman and any other woman he needs to, the scene where she breaks the chair in the restaurant, and he, even though he can't see that the reason the chair broke is because she's so obese, he gets into the restaurant owner's face and is like, obviously this chair is faulty. Like, it's
they're just playing along with it. Like, yes, of course.
Like, I mean, yeah, it's just between that. I mean, and just the whole change, like the whole change from him. And like, I think right after Tony Robbins puts a spell on him, he goes to the club where he meets Rosemary. And like, he sees like these skinny, hot model chicks that any guy would love to spend the night with, but they look like witches. They look ugly to him because of the thing of what Tony Robbins put in him, the hypnotherapy that Tony Robbins did in him. And I've had hypnotism paranormal than normal, so I mean, hypnotism definitely works and it's definitely real. Yeah. I've seen proof of it, but it's just, I mean, I've been on cruise ships when I was a kid too, so I've seen plenty of proof of hypnotism actually working, but just. Hypnotherapy is a very real thing, and the stuff Tony Robbins does on him is just like, he sees people who they are on the inside. And until I met my wife, like, I wish that's ability I had. I mean, I'm sure if I had it now, and I breath to my wife every day, she's still be beautiful as I see her every day, regardless. But I mean, it's just that it's something that everybody should have, because like,
absolutely,
if we saw people who were on the inside, we wouldn't get fooled so many times by these snakes in the bushes and whatnot.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's good. I think seeing people for who they are, whether you agree with what they say or what they believe, it doesn't matter. But it's like, Yeah, see the person as they are and understand them, and then you'll get along with people better. I think that's kind of my takeaway from the film as well. And that to not judge someone based on their appearance, because you know, you never know like what someone's dealing with, or you know, we've all got that kind of untapped you know, potential. Exactly. That overlooked because we don't look a certain way to everyone else, you know? Yeah.
I know plenty of people who look like they're normal, pretty human beings, but deep down, they're just horrible. And I mean, I'm not saying that every person that's good looking is evil. No, that's not the message here. But I just want to clarify that. But I mean, there are plenty of good looking people who use that. That they know they have good looks and they use that to their advantage because people believe them typically because they have those good looks.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of people, such as myself, who were treated differently because they look different their whole life. And because of that, they're truer human beings because they know what it's like to be treated horrible.
That's the real
message behind this whole movie is.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I agree with
you. The people who have been treated certain ways their whole life are going to be their more true selves because they get to the point where they just don't care anymore. It's just think what you want to be. I know who I am. The pretty people don't know who they are. I mean, we were just talking about it before the podcast, but if you want another movie with an example of that, watch Just Friends.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Ryan Reynolds. Yeah. And was it, who's the girl in that film? Amy Smart, wasn't it?
Amy Smart and Anna Faris playing opposite roles, basically.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Good stuff. Absolutely, yeah. All right. Well, I guess for anyone who hasn't seen Shaloha, when you look at the trailer, it just looks like, oh, it's a film that makes fun of fat people. But look a bit closer, you know? It's kind of like the tagline of American Beauty. Look closer, you know? And you'll see a film with a bit more depth to it than just how it appears in the trailer. But it certainly starts off that way. But then as the relationship between, you know, Jack Black and Gwyneth Paltrow's characters evolves, it kind of takes on that sort of deeper meaning to it, and it's got a really nice message, you know, and a really nice ending, I thought. So yeah, it was a good movie. It's definitely a rewatchable.
And the fact that he works for her father just adds to the comedy. Absolutely. Which I don't know off the top of my head the actor who plays her father, but he's a famous actor from like Sopranos and other Italian
movies. Yeah, he always was playing mafia guys, wasn't he? Yeah, was it Joe something?
I'm trying to figure it out.
He passed away maybe about 10 years ago or something. Yeah.
Oh, Joe Vitarelli. Yeah. Joe Vitarelli.
That's right.
And I mean Jason Alexander plays his best friend too. I forgot about that. So
That right there
is the comedy, because it's freaking Jason Alexander and Jack Black, which is comedy gold. That's comedy gold. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, Jason Alexander very much channeling his kind of neurotic George Costanza kind of persona that he was so well known for.
He does. Yeah. And and I'll put it this way, he's a dog.
Yeah, absolutely. But even he kind of comes around a little bit by the end. But awesome. All right, well, Shallow Hal, definitely worth a watch. Not just a movie that makes fun of fat people. There's a bit more going on there. So if you haven't seen it, check it out, as Jeremy has recommended. All right, well, we might move on to your next film, Jeremy, if that's okay. Something completely different now. And this is what you consider to be your all-time favorite film. We've all got more than one favorite film, but for the sake of this podcast, we have to choose one. I think from our prior conversation, you were pretty clear from the start what that film was going to be for you. So, tell us, what is the name of that film and what is it? What's it all about?
That film is Moulin Rouge.
Tell me you don't love me!
This story is about love at the Moulin Rouge.
I came out in 2001, and I didn't see it until probably 2003-04. Ended up becoming one of my mom's favorite movies when I was in high school, and I would see her watching it. I would see scenes from it all the time, and like, she would watch it constantly for a long time.
Yeah.
And eventually I sat down with her and I watched the whole thing, and I mean, I was always a fan of musicals, but this movie, the music in it, because I have brought the soundtrack album to my show in one of the first episodes, and just the acting in it by Ewan McGregor, by Nicole Kidman, by John Leguizamo, by a lot of, and a bunch of unknown actors that you really don't know who they are except for this movie. I mean,
yeah, a lot of Australian actors.
But it's an amazing movie that's a timepiece about early 1900s, late 1800s. I forget the name of the town. Oh, Bohemia. It's about Bohemia, basically. And it's these playwrights / singers, actors who want to perform at the local burlesque theater, their play, and they have to convince the owner of it to want to do it. And basically, they do end up convincing him through song and dance and through just mysterious circumstances. But basically, they end up doing it, and the whole movie's about the writer that moves in below these actors, and he becomes friends with them, and he falls in love with the head star of the burlesque show.
Yeah,
and it's basically a battle of who gets her love, the poor writer who just came here to experience freedom for the first time, or a rich asshole of a duke who is used to his money being able to get whatever he wants, and whatever he wants to acquire, he ends up being able to get it basically in his life. Yeah. And the fact that he can't get this one girl to be bought is damning to him throughout the movie. And at least
did this become your favorite film around the time you first saw it, or has that gradually become your favorite film? What's the story there?
I fell in love with the story when I first saw it. I fell in love with the story because as a fat kid in high school, as I said in the last movie, I knew the feeling of wanting a woman and not being able to get her because there were more popular guys. There were guys whose families had more money there. I mean, that was less of the circumstance, but it's just, I knew what it was like to not be able to get the girl you wanted. And that's what got to me. And there's this original song, well, not original exactly, but there's a melody of known songs they do in this called the Elephant Medley. And it's songs that Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman are singing back and forth to each other, like basically the chorus of song of different songs from the 70s and 80s.
That's right.
On top of this giant elephant that Satine, Nicole Kidman's character, lives in. And it's one of the most beautiful medleys you'll ever hear in your life. To this day, it still makes me kind of tear up. I mean, there's a lot of Elton John thrown in there.
Yep.
There's a lot of Phil Collins thrown in there. Like, it's a lot of amazing artists that are thrown into their courses are thrown into this medley. And it's just, I mean, every song in this movie, except for one, is beautiful. Yep. I mean, the whole like a virgin scene, I could do without. I think that's the stupidest fucking scene in the movie.
Right.
With the Duke and Harold, the head of the owner of the burlesque parlor, like them singing like a virgin, I could do without. I used to fast forward through that scene every time I watched the movie.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a stupid scene, but I mean, the rest of it is beautiful. They do a great rendition of Sting and the Police's Roxanne. They do the beginning song is a mix of all different genres. There's Nirvana thrown in
just
there. There's Nirvana
thrown in there.
Oh, it makes you like the opening of the movie is very slow and depressing, and you have to get past it like the first 5-10 minutes to get to the point where they enter the club for the first time, and it's just a whole other world. And just to hear Nirvana and in the same like in the same song as Madonna, and like it's just it's magical. I mean, it brings you to a different time and place completely. And just I mean, I always said I was born too late in this world. I'm an old soul. I'm meant to be born many, many decades before I was born. I was meant to be someone else completely, and my spirit got stuck in whatever you believe. But it's just, I should have been born decades earlier, because I would have been way better off in life if I was. At least I thought that for a long time talking about my kids and wife I have now. But I mean, but still, I mean, it's just simpler times. But
absolutely, I can relate to that. Yep,
this movie is just beautiful, and this movie turned me on to Ewan McGregor completely.
I mean,
Nicole Kidman was a known entity by the time this movie came out, but
Ewan
McGregor up to this point hadn't really done anything. He made him Phantom Menace right around the same time, honestly. Yep. But
yep.
I mean, Phantom Menace at the time was not appreciated the way it is nowadays.
Yep.
But Hugh McGregor was unknown. I mean, he became one of my favorite actors over time, basically, yep. because of this movie. But
yep.
this is my all-time favorite movie because of the message it holds. And just the ending is so fucking depressing and sad, and they don't try to redeem it with something happy. That's real right. life. That's real life.
Yeah.
Life isn't always happy and smiling. Life can be depressing and ending your day on a bad note. That's just life.
Yeah, 100%. And the way this film uses music is it's really genius because it's, I think it was the first film of its type, I think, to take a song and place it in a completely different era or setting that you would never expect to hear it, but it services the story and the plot, and it breathed all this new life into the song, which was very, very smart. Yeah.
It does. I was wondering where you were going with that, because I was going to say, like, musicals are not an original thing at this point. But, I mean, yes, to use songs that are pre-made, I mean, at that time was unknown. I mean,
yep.
to see a bunch of men in suits and hats and top hats singing Here We Are Now, entertainers, yep. is a whole
yep.
another... I mean, I didn't even know who Nirvana was at that point, honestly, because I was still in like middle school. I didn't know who Nirvana was. Like, it was before my time. Like,
yeah.
Nirvana, Kurt Cobain died when I was like 3. So, Nirvana was a little before my time, and my parents were into the generation before that. They weren't into that type of metal,
right.
rock. So, it just,
yeah.
It was, I didn't know that was Nirvana for a long time until I found out eventually that was a Nirvana song. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
It's just, a lot of the music I ended up loving later in my life, this movie helped me love because of the aspect they used it in.
Yeah. And have you seen the Broadway show, Moulin Rouge, since seeing the movie?
No. I've seen some Broadway shows, but we were huge. I mean, trust me, if the theater we went to regularly, like every season, actually had that show, we would have been going to it. My mom would have made sure of that. But I would have been in heaven, but... Yeah. I have not seen the stage show, but I would love to. I don't think they do it anymore, honestly. I think it kind of its time has passed and a long time ago, and they kind of like got rid of it. But
it's currently playing in Melbourne, in my city, at the moment. So yeah, we've got a pretty bustling theatre culture here in Melbourne, Australia. So we've got a theatre district. We've got quite a few good theatres. So yeah, it's here at the moment. An Australian production. I think it's an all Australian cast, this version, but. It comes back every now and then. It's definitely pretty popular here because it has obviously an Australian flavor to it. It's got Nicole Kidman, directed by Baz Luhrmann, who's an Australian. It's got a lot of Aussie actors in it that most Australians will know. And it was filmed in Australia as well. It was all filmed in Sydney, I believe. So because Baz Luhrmann still does all of his movies in Australia, which is really cool. You know, he exposes Australia to the world, which is great. He actually did a film called Australia. So there you go.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I haven't seen that many Australian films. I think I've seen TV shows more from Australia than films, but
yep.
Australian shows are always good. There's the one show Neighbours that's from Australia.
Oh yeah, you know Neighbours, yeah.
I don't know it per se, but I read about it a long time ago and I looked it up on Wikipedia and everything. And I've always wanted to like have a way to watch all of it, but there's like, I think there's like 30, 40 years of episodes to watch. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's been good. Well, they stopped it and they brought it back due to popular demand. So it's just been sort of rebooted after it was on air for nearly 40 years. It was only gone for less than a year and they brought it back. So, yeah.
You can't turn it, from what I read, it's more of like a soap opera, but still, it sounds very captivating and interesting, and I would love to watch it one day if I actually had a streaming service that had it.
Yeah, well, you've got a friend in Australia now, so I'll see if I can find some DVDs and send them over to you. All right, you can check out Neighbours. We'll do a Neighbours podcast.
I
used to watch it as a kid, but I haven't watched it for a long time. So, but yeah, that is one of our regular shows. But yeah, we've got some good movies as well. So, anyway, but coming back to you and Moulin Rouge, So you mentioned that your mum used to watch it a lot, and then you kind of eventually you sat down and watched it. So prior to that, did you kind of have some reservations about watching it? Were you like, musical, not my thing? But eventually,
I mean,
yeah.
I was a typical middle school boy. oh, musicals are for homos. Like, I ain't watching that. And like, it's just like, it's a stupid conception of a kid. And eventually it made me into a musical lover. I mean, shortly after that, because of watching that movie, I discovered The Producers, and I was like, okay, musicals are good. I'm like, give me Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick any day. Give me
Peter Gregory any day.
I will watch all of those. Like, I am a full musical lover now. I don't, there's not that many coming out that there, as there used to be. I mean, there's no Mamma Mia's coming out now. There's no The Producers coming out now. Like, the musicals that come out nowadays are usually done by what's his freaking name in Hamilton. It's just like, I'm good. Hamilton was okay. I watched it once and I'm like, I don't need to see this ever again.
Sure. Yeah. Not everyone's cup of tea. Yeah. Do you have some other honorable movie musicals that you like?
I mean, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, with Johnny Depp and like half the Harry Potter cast, freaking amazing. Trying to think here. Across the Universe, the Beatles musical. I freaking love that movie.
That's a good one. Yeah.
So I love that movie. Other than off the top of my head, I mean, South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut, is a musical itself. So
it is. Yeah.
I guess that technically was my first musical, but I didn't realize it was a musical at the time. Even I just. Yeah. It was South Park, and it was Cartman at his greatest, so that's all I care about. But it's definitely a musical, and it's amazing. And I mean, I didn't discover Mamma Mia till later in life, but I love Mamma Mia because I love the music of ABBA. Yeah. And other than that, I mean, I went to the theater all the time. I've seen Les Mis live. I've seen the Full Monty live. Like I've seen Grease live, and I mean, Grease actually technically was my first musical ever. Like when my brother and I were in elementary school, we fell in love with Grease. And when it came out, like on its 30th, it came out like its 20th or, yeah, I think it's 20th anniversary, they released it on VHS. And I love John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John in that movie. Yes, I wanted to say Sandra Dee. I don't know why, but
that was her character. Yeah, name,
yeah. I love Olivia Newton-John. I love John Travolta in that movie. It's amazing. It was my first exposure to musicals, honestly.
Yeah, it's a classic. Yeah, I'm sure it'll pop up on this podcast at some point.
I mean, I am not a fan of West Side Story. Really, I'm not like there's certain musicals I just can't get into per se, but I mean, they have to have a good cast and they have to be well done. Yep. West Side Story to me was always kind of like, these gangster boys are not singing about before they stab somebody. They're just going to stab somebody and run away. Like, come on now.
That's right.
I mean, at least Moulin Rouge seems at least logical that could happen in real life to some degree. Same as Grease. And I mean, I don't know. It's just, there's certain things that could lend more reality to than not.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's other musicals I'm completely forgetting that I can't think of at this moment, but I mean, there's so many good ones out there.
Absolutely. There's some good honorable mentions there. Yeah.
Classic and modern. There's a lot of great musicals out there. So
For sure. So you also said something earlier before that what the message of this film was. And yeah, I'm curious to hear your take on that. Like what is the message of the film? Is it that true love is doomed? What's the story there, you reckon?
I don't think true love is doomed is exactly the message of this movie. I think the message of the movie is it's one of those like just you're gonna love who you're gonna love messages, and it's okay to be that way. Like that's what it is. Like, and it takes the whole movie for most of the characters in the movie to see that it's true love, but once they do at the end, and like a lot of them see it before the end, it's just they know what it is. And it's also a message of just because there's someone that might be better than you financially, society ways or whatnot, like it doesn't mean that they're going to win that girl's love over you. Don't give up because someone who you think may be better than you, when I air quotes around that better word better, don't give up. Like, just don't give up when you truly love somebody. Like, if you truly think someone is who you're meant to be with, go for it until they literally threaten a restraining order. Go for it. Like, I'm not saying go to their house and be a peeping Tom or anything, but just try to win their hearts. Try to win their hearts. But I mean, that's the message of the movie. I mean, True Love is Doomed is not really the message of the movie, though, because, I mean, like I said, she was a hooker. She was a whore. Of course, yeah. She has diseases that are going to kill her. And it's the early 1900s. Consumption was a very real thing back then, a lot. Yeah, they killed a lot of women and men. So, I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
She really didn't even die from being a whore. She died just from... I forget what exactly consumption is nowadays, but... I want to think it's some kind of lung disease, but...
Yeah, that was my guess, yeah. Because she was coughing up blood.
I looked it up at one point, and it's not even like an AIDS-type thing. It's just some kind of lung disease. I think it's tuberculosis. I think it's what they call it back then, is consumption.
Which was pretty rampant back at the turn of the century, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like she even died because of her profession, but, I mean... The message is basically love who you want to love, and in the end, people realize you were right.
Yeah, good point. And you know, it's a love story at its core, but then for a film about, you know, just pure imagination, a love of music, and it's very, you know, electric and vibrant, and it just doesn't stop. You know, it's very entertaining in that way as well. And I'd never seen it prior to this podcast, and it wasn't one I would seek out. You know, I'm not a big musical fan myself, but, you know, part of this podcast is I'll go and watch whatever film the guest wants to talk about. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought it was really well done. And, you know, you can't...
I mean...
Baz Luhrmann never holds back, you know, as a director. He really...
Oh.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the movie... They do a Queen song in that movie that is freaking... They do it almost better than Queen does. So, I mean, I know you didn't have a chance to finish it, really, but you got to finish it and watch that scene, okay?
I will. All right, so, yeah, Moulin Rouge. Definitely a feast for the eyes, and some great music used really in a really clever way. So, and a lot going on in that film, you know, I kind of had to stop and kind of catch my breath a couple of times in typical Baz Luhrmann fashion, very, very fast paced, but very entertaining. So your last film, absolutely. Yeah. So your last film now, Jeremy, this is the film you think everyone should watch. And it's always an interesting category on every episode, this one. And the films are as diverse as they come, I think, because everyone has a different opinion on what's warrants a film that you have to see in your life. And you might only watch it once, it might become your new favorite film. You might watch it once and be like, oh, I can never watch that again, you know, it was just too much or whatever. I must say, I wasn't expecting this film to come into this category. So I was like, now after having just only watched it for the first time, you know, and a lot of film buffs will shoot me because I've never seen it before, but I've seen it now. Anyway, over to you. Tell us, what is this film everyone has to see and why?
Well, all I can say to start this off is, I'm all right. Don't worry about me. So the film that we're talking about for this one, and you may say, why is everybody to see this? Because you're a damn fool if you haven't. No offense. But the film we're talking about is, of course, Caddyshack.
I said freeze, gopher!
Caddyshack. It's all about swinging.
Kiss me, you fool.
But not on the course.
Hey, you want to make $14 the hard way?
Playing a good game.
Oh, he got all of that one.
And talking a better one.
Hey, I should have stayed home and played with myself.
Taking shots.
That was a bum shot.
And making time.
We couldn't possibly think less of each other.
Controlling your drives.
Wow.
And losing your grip. Ah.
It is you out.
Four.
The man's a menace.
Caddyshack, the comedy with...
I mean, Bill Murray, freaking Rodney Dangerfield, Chevy Chase, yeah. I mean, Lou Murray, Bill Murray's brother's in it too. I mean, it's just so many good actors. I mean, the actor who plays Judge Smalls, I forget his name, he was a big actor back then. He died shortly after, but...
Right, yeah.
It was like four big actors and then a couple up and coming actors at that time. So
that's right. Yeah, definitely. And it's all about the world of golf, of course, hence the name. And in particular about these caddies. who work there.
It's golf's kind of the subtopic of it, I'd say.
Yep.
The main topic of it is basically trying to figure out what you want to fucking do in life. That's the topic of it. It's about trying to figure out where you want to go in life and who you're going to use to your advantage to help you with that, whether it be a rich snob of a judge or whether it's a golf pro who should be a golf pro but isn't because he has money and he just likes to booze it up and sleep with different women every night. So, I mean, it's basically about who, and the typical hardworking Irish father that is trying to lead you on the right path. But, I mean, it's about basically finding the right role models in life and choosing who your right role models to be.
Yeah. And about a very resourceful gopher who steals the show. And I'd love to just go back and watch just the gopher scenes now of that film. And they're hilarious. Him and Bill Murray. I loved that little subplot. That was great.
I am sure there's a compilation or two on YouTube for you. But...
Oh, of course. I was thinking that when I was watching. I'm sure there's one with just the gopher and someone's probably put, you know, music from another movie in it and made it look like it's Die Hard or something like that. I'd love to see that, yeah.
I'm sure they have. And I mean, the gopher was even in the sequel.
That's right. Yeah.
So one of the few actors...
Your thoughts on the sequel? Because I did IMDb the sequel and it was not very well liked. What were your thoughts?
I think the sequel is highly underrated because, I mean, yes, it doesn't hold up to the star power or the amazingness of the first. But yes, Rodney Dangerfield didn't return because I think he was filming Back to School at the time. Right. And Chevy Chase is the only, I mean, Bill Murray didn't come back either, I'm pretty sure. Because funny fact, this is the only movie you ever see Bill Murray and Chevy Chase in together because they actually hate each other behind the scenes of SNL.
Ah, right. Didn't know that. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that scene with them in Carl's shed, Bill Murray's shed that he lives in, like, the scene that them together is the only scene you'll ever see of them in a movie together.
Yeah. And it's the only time they're on screen together, isn't it? Yeah.
Because they both were the top stars of SNL back in the day, and when it first started, and they just hated each other behind the scenes. They hated each other. They both had big personalities, and they just couldn't get those personalities to blend at all. You know?
Yeah, very very different kind of brands of humor as well. I think watching this now, having seen a bunch of Bill Murray and Chevy Chase films, Chevy Chase had sort of was a little more established at that point than Bill Murray was. And then obviously Chevy Chase went on and did all those vacation movies and a bunch of stuff like that. Whereas Bill Murray, it might've been one of his early films, I believe. So it was before
all the Ghostbusters movies and everything that got him huge.
That's right. So. Yeah. And Ghostbusters obviously is where he really channeled his kind of deadpan humor that then led to all those great comedies he did in the 80s and 90s as well. So yeah, I can see how those two would probably clash. That makes a bit of sense, you know.
it makes sense. I mean, it's same as in, I hate to keep bringing this up, but same as in Tropic Thunder, like how the way that Ben Stiller and Robert Downey Jr.'s characters clash all the time. Like,
that's right.
You could tell there's more going on there than just on the movie.
Oh, for sure. But I think the movie benefited from that because there was obviously friction between the characters in the situation as well. So. Yeah, but Caddyshack's just a slapstick, goofball kind of comedy. It reminded me a lot of like the Meatballs movies, which were popular in the 80s at that time, where it was all about summer, about just screwing around, getting into trouble, having fun, you know, and that was kind of what the movies were about back then, wasn't it, in a lot of ways?
I mean, it was. I mean, comedies back then were very slapstick always. I mean, it was in the same era as Revenge of the Nerds and Animal House, so... I mean, it was one of those movies that it's one of those movies you have to watch more than once because you're going to miss jokes if you don't.
Yeah.
Like there's, especially Bill Murray's character, like the little lines he says when he's just watching either women golf or when he's talking to random caddies, like the lines he says are just fucking priceless. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
they're very funny. Yeah.
He's watching the women golf and he barks like a dog for me. Bark like a dog.
That's right. Yeah. These older women, and he's got like, he's just checking them out and you know, not doing his job.
I mean, his opening line in the movie is priceless.
Yeah.
God, I want you to kill all the golfers. Why would I kill all the golfers? There'd be no one to come then. Not Garfas, you idiot, Gophas. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's classic. Like, it's just Bill Murray at his fucking greatest. Like, I, Lions, I mean, this is not the first podcast by far I have brought this movie to because it's just such a timeless classic. But, I mean, Chevy Chase, too, with his one-liners all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole putting it in with the like, it's just classic. And when he's in, when he's entertaining the judge's niece in the one episode, like as house, like the liners he drops, like like he's pouring oil on her, and he just accidentally he pours too much on purpose. He's like, whoops, here we go, and he slides right onto her. It's just like it's typical '70s ladies' man Chevy Chase.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah, and I guess you know, quite. In some ways, quite chauvinist, quite misogynist. Oh, or, you know,
very, very,
and all that. But that's what movies were back then. So, you know,
I mean, it was the time. It was the time. I mean, Caddyshack came out at a time when women were not looked at the same way they are nowadays. And we respect women nowadays that so much that that movie can never be remade. And if they tried to remake that movie, they would fucking ruin it. And I would boycott the shit out of that movie.
Yeah. So. Some things just are not meant to be remade. It's like they were made in that time and they reflected that time. Just leave it as it is, you know, and let us journey back 43 years ago or however long it was and just laugh at what we thought was it's funny back then, you know? Yeah.
It's funny because part of the show I'm on, Bracket Masters, part of what we do is it's called the Recasting Call every month. And we actually recast an old movie and current actors who we think could pull up the roles, but certain movies like that we just don't touch, and even if the host of it tried to bring up that movie, I'd be like, fuck you, no, we're not doing that movie. It'd have to be cast perfectly, and we are doing it. I'm on that show because I need to make sure it's cast perfectly. Yeah.
And it was well cast, it really was. And I think you had like three very different styles of comedy there. You had the Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, and then you had Rodney Dangerfield with all of his one-liners and puns, and he was hilarious. Like, he had some of the funniest scenes in the movie, I thought. Like the scene where he's on the boat and the boat is like the runaway boat and he's just crashing everything and
Amelia Earhart was skinny head, like oh my god, like that, the lines he drops in that movie. I mean, just his ending line in the movie, hey, we're all getting laid.
Yeah,
like I fucking love it. I love it. Like I love
just
that
so
shit.
Left center, so out of nowhere, isn't it? But it kind of suits the situation.
Him at the dinner scene at the club where he's walking through and he just lets one rip and he's just like, whoa, who stepped on a duck? Yeah. Like, I use that line to this day when I let one rip. It's just like, who stepped on a duck?
That's right.
I mean, when he sees the judge dancing, when he sees the judge dancing with his wife and he's like, whoa, you seem pretty easy, honey. Like, it's just like, oh.
No filter whatsoever.
Tell the chef this is low-grade dog food.
Yeah, that's right. And then it cuts to the chef in the kitchen. He's about to run at him with the meat cleaver, and they're all like, stop, stop.
He's like, yeah, dog food? Like, it's just like, oh, my God. It's stuff that no human being would ever say in a public setting to somebody. And he just, Rodney Dangerfield gives no fucks. Like, he just
that's
has,
right.
I get no respect. So I'm just going to give no shits. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah. So I guess for a younger audience who may be familiar with like Happy Gilmore, which, you know, took a serious game and culture and made it funny. This is well before Happy Gilmore. So I guess this would be the first film of its type to use golf as a setting and have all these, you know, goofballs and comedy happening around something that's meant to be serious and dignified.
Happy Gilmore is basically a modern wannabe Caddyshack. That's what it is. I mean, Adam Sandler saw something he could run with and he ran with it and he did it fucking miraculously. But he wasn't trying to make a Caddyshack, and that was the damn point. He wasn't trying to make a Caddyshack. And I mean, it wasn't about the caddies. It wasn't about the inner workings of the golf course or the country club. It was about a golfer, a golfer who was a good golfer who didn't even want to be a golfer. So it's a different thing.
That's right. Yeah. I guess films that about that portray golf in that way, those are the only two I can think of. The rest are all like pretty, you know, pretty serious and pay respect to the game. Whereas Caddyshack just takes the piss out of it. Yeah.
there's one other similar movie with, I want to say it's Ice Cube, but I could be wrong, where it's about basically an African-American gentleman moves into a neighborhood and he tries to be part of the country club and they try to keep him out. I forget what the hell it's called. I saw it like once, but that's the only other movie I could think that's similar.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, fair enough. Oh, okay. I can't think of what that is off the top of my head either, but well, maybe someone can put it in the comments for us if they're listening.
Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. I don't think it's Ice Cube. I think it's Cedric the Entertainer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, cool. And how did you first discover Caddyshack? Because it's a bit before both of our times, really, before we were born. So how did it come into your life?
Funny enough, my father. Yeah. Oh, okay. It was called Who's Your Caddy?
Who's Your Caddy? Okay.
That was the name of the movie with Cedric the Entertainer. So, okay. Cool. I had to look it up or it was going to piss me off all night. But
no worries.
My father, who has now been deceased for 6 years, he this is one of the movies that I literally just went to the trailer he was living in at one point, and we were just laying in his bed watching. He put on this movie that he had on DVD, and I never heard of it before. I think I may have heard of it, but I never actually watched it. And he put it on, and we fell asleep during it just because it was another day. We were both tired, I guess. I don't know, whatever. But I ended up watching it again eventually and all the way through. And I just fell in love with this movie and how hilarious it was.
Yeah.
I mean, the soundtrack is fucking incredibly amazing. So many hit songs from the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just freaking Eddie Cochran, Kenny Loggins did the main theme.
That's right.
Journey's in it. Like, it's just a classic 70s soundtrack. And
yeah, do you have the soundtrack? Are you able to actually get the soundtrack still these days? Or
I wouldn't be surprised if it's on Spotify, but yeah. I mean, I can't say I've ever looked, but I mean, it's just everything about it is amazing. I mean, it's like I said, it's one of those movies you have to watch multiple times. Okay, yeah, it is on Spotify completely. So cool. You can get the soundtrack on Spotify. I mean, Kenny Loggins does 4 songs on it, and Johnny Mandel does like 3.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But I mean, Journey's on there. Phil Collins is on there, awesome. And then the rest is all basically those two artists. But I mean, it's just it's such an amazing movie, and I mean, it's one of those movies where every scene has so many hidden jokes that you don't catch the first time, the third time, the fifth time, the seventh time. Like, it's just, definitely. I could watch it nowadays and hear something I didn't hear the first time that some random person said was just hilarious. I mean,
definitely. Yeah.
The whole scene, everything. I can go through this movie scene for scene, fucking be laughing my ass off talking about it. I mean, the pool scene where the freaking chocolate bar, where Bill Murray, like they clean the pool, and Bill Murray freaking like is like, he picks it up, and the freaking judge's wife like is about to faint. He's like, oh, it's just chocolate.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, oh, I forget what he said. He's like, it's a Milky Way bar or something like that. Like, and the wife faints when he bites it. Like, it's just, oh my God.
There's a lot of funny scenes in it that just kind of come out of nowhere. And it's great. Like, I was really entertained the whole way through.
You have to watch it more than once if you really want to enjoy it. You have to watch it at least 5 times to really enjoy it. I mean, by the 5th time, you know what most of the lines are going to be. So that's when you really start hearing the ones that are not being heard originally. Like, the stuff people say in the background when the main character's speaking. Like, it's just, it's a classic. It's a fucking classic. I love it. It's one of those movies. I actually bought it on Amazon. It's the only movie I ever actually bought on Amazon Prime because I want to be able to watch. I want to be able to watch it whenever the hell I want.
Not have to worry about streaming.
I mean, and it's just a quick hour and a half of your life, and you're enjoying it immensely. If you're having a bad day, put on Caddyshack. You're not gonna fucking regret it.
That's it. Yeah. and like, it just takes this what's supposed to be this serious game and this serious culture and just makes fun of it. And it's great because it's like, you know, the people that lose and that really cop it are the ones who are taking everything way too seriously. You know, the ones who win in the end are like the ones that get walked over and pushed around, like the caddies and the, you know, the people that work at the golf course, not these like rich retirees who just play golf all the time. You know, like they're the ones who get screwed over. So it's great. Yeah, it's hilarious.
It is. I mean, Rodney Dangerfield's character on the golf course is one of the funniest things ever, because just like, oh, look at this guy. I bet he's going to nail into the woods. And then the freaking judge turns around and he's like, excuse me, sir, we're trying to golf here. Yeah. And or I'm trying to tee up here. And Ryan Dangerfield's just like, I bet you $1,000 you knock in the woods. And of course he does, because of course he does. It's just, and like the fact that the rich people are trying to cheat this whole movie, and like eventually they just get caught on it, and it's just like, nope, we're playing this game the right way. And it shows that the people who are not rich are the better ones, because they actually put their heart into it a little bit more.
That's right. Yeah, they're the ones who've got more to lose. So yeah, they win in the end, which is great. Yeah, and it is a good time. It's funny. It's, you know, just don't take it too seriously. Anyone watching this who's willing to check it out, switch off for an hour and a half, like Jeremy said, and you'll have a good laugh. And, you know, you may never look at golf the same way again.
do what you do. Have a few drinks, take a few puffs, depending where you live and if it's legal or not. But do what you do. Do what you do to relax and watch this movie, because you will die laughing. If you don't die laughing, I question whether you have a soul.
Oh yeah, it is hilarious. Yeah, and there's a lot of different jokes, and there's lots of sort of styles of humor. So there's something in it for everyone. You know, like, yeah. So I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. Yeah, cool. And just sort of in kind of wrapping up, Jeremy, is there a few other honorable mentions, films that maybe you would have liked to have talked about today? Some of your other favorites, some other must-see movies?
Let me unscroll my ancient Roman scroll here that goes down to the floor and into the next room. But, I mean, easily could talk about any of the Star Wars prequels or original trilogy movies. Easily could talk about some movies I mentioned already, Animal House, Revenge of the Nerds. Definitely could talk about any of them. Yeah. I could have went horror and went into the horror freaking genre, and oh my god, I mean, I'm falling in love recently with the Puppet Master series, so that's becoming a new favorite of mine. But I mean, I could have easily talked any Stephen King, most Stephen King movies, I should say, not all of them, because some of them are a couple of them are trash. But I mean, I could talk Stephen King. I mean, there's so many movies I could mention here. I mean, any of the Lord of the Rings, any of the Harry Potters, like I could have.
Yeah,
any of the Marvel, DC movies, like I could have geeked out. I wanted to go with movies that most people don't geek out over. That's why I wanted to go with. It's the ones I love that most people don't agree with me with.
Yeah,
most people haven't seen that I love. Like I didn't want to be like, okay, Star Wars this, Star Wars that, and maybe Avengers that. Like I didn't want to do that, because that's as much as I love the certain popular franchises. I hate some of them, but certain popular franchises I love, and I would love to talk about them constantly, but I can't. It's not educating people to watch something they already know they love.
Exactly. Like, that's it. And this, you know, that's really the whole focus of this podcast, is, you know, a bit of diversity and find something new, you know, which is great, because there's so many movies out there. Like we were just talking about this before, you know, like you could just pick a year and explore just that year alone, and you've got hundreds of films you could watch. You could spend a whole lifetime just watching films from 1 year. You know, so there's just so much stuff out there. Yeah. And just sort of the final question, a bit of food for thought, and hopefully I don't put you on the spot here too much, but I liked, and you're a movie guy, you're a podcast guy, you might have some thoughts on this. So the future of movies, I always like to pick people's brains on this. We're at a bit of an interesting turning point with movies at the moment, for a few different reasons. And things are changing, things need to change. What once was popular is not so popular anymore. Audiences are kind of craving something a little new. So yeah, what are your thoughts? What would you like to see more of, less of? What do you think needs to happen?
As far as the future of movies is concerned, I love the fact that Marvel, and mainly Marvel, but DC as well, is becoming, and comic book movies in general, are becoming a huge fan favorite now, because those are movies I loved as a kid, even as a high schooler, and they just weren't that big back then, so they didn't make it that far. Like there's three X-Men movies, and then they stopped, and then there were like one Daredevil movie and two Fantastic Four movies, and they stopped. And like, but if it wasn't Batman or Superman, they weren't making a lot of them back in the day. But so I mean, I love that that's part of the future movies, is that comic books are being taken more legit, and they are taking them more serious. And they're making amazing movies. Thank you, Kevin Feige, and James Gunn as well, now that he's taken over DC. But and I love that, and I love the fact that, what the hell is the other thing I was thinking of? I mean, horror movies are kind of, I don't know, newer horror movies are not being great. unless they're remakes of something. And at some of this point, it's like five remakes of the same movie. What the fuck are you thinking? Like, come up with something original, please. But I mean, the future movie scares me in the comedy, though, because comedy movies are not what they once were at all.
No.
Buddy cop, slapstick, improv humor movies. Like, they're just not what they were in the 90s, in the early 2000s, in the 80s, and the 70s. They're not. I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, I honestly can't think of the last Will Ferrell or Vince Vaughn movie I really loved.
Yeah.
That I've seen, even. Like, it's just a lot of, there's a huge void right now because a lot of actors are not acting anymore. Except for maybe one movie every couple of years, and they're doing different projects now that the world's so spoken on the internet and everything. They're doing internet stuff instead of doing movies, and just, I mean, honestly, I can't think of the last thing Vince Vaughn was in that I saw. So, I mean, that's saying something.
Yeah, but, true. Yeah, I agree with you there. I think a part of that also is that, you know, with cancel culture and people being so easily offended now, it's hard to do comedy without getting, you know, ripped to shreds.
I literally have an episode of Paranormal Normal coming out where part of the title of it is fuck cancel culture. But I mean, it's not even really paranormal in nature 100%, but I think it is in some degree. But if you want to hear that, my argument on that, get listen on that episode. It's a freaking good one. But I mean, I hate cancel culture. I feel like it's destroying America and the rest of the world slowly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of going away right now, but it's going to make a comeback, I'm sure, next time some male star does something stupid. But I mean, comedies are not ones they once were. I can't even think of a comedy that I've seen lately that's as good as they were in the 90s, 2000s. I can't even think of one.
Yeah.
I mean, even Adam Sandler's last movies have been like hit and miss. I mean, he's even trying to do more serious movies in the comedies anymore. And it's just like, I can do Adam Sandler serious. Give me the one where he falls in love with the house cleaner / babysitter.
Spanglish. Yeah.
Spanglish. Like, give me M. Sandler doing Spanglish serious, and I could freaking love it.
Yeah, he was pretty
uncut,
good.
Uncut Gems. What the fuck is that? Mm. Like that's the way I feel. But, sure. I mean, I feel like a lot of the actors that we love are not doing anything, but they're making, like, guest appearances on, like, SNL or stuff like that.
Yeah,
or
on they're TV playing shows. It safe. They're playing it safe, aren't they? Yeah,
maybe they're just at the point where they're like, I have enough money, I'm good. But
yeah, there doesn't seem to be that. We don't have those comedy stars like we used to, like the Robin Williams, the Jim Carrey, you know, we're just punching out one great comedy after another. You know, where are those guys now?
Jim Carrey said he's done. He said he's done now. And I mean, we all know where Robin Williams is, unfortunately. But
yeah.
I mean, it's just all the great comedy actors are either passing away, or they're just not doing movies anymore. And I mean, it's sad. I mean, a lot of them, some of them are doing original stuff on Hulu and Netflix, which I'm down for. I love TV series. I mean, that's another thing I love is that Star Wars is finally being taken as seriously as it should have been 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Star Wars is all over the place now, and I love that. I mean, we need good science fiction, and we weren't getting it. For a long time, we were not getting good science fiction movies. I mean, Star Trek, Star Trek is always there, and I like Star Trek to some degree. I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan. I'm not a Trekkie by no fucking means, but I'll pick Star Wars over Star Trek any day of the week. Sorry, Trekkies, but it's just the way it is. I mean, it's more entertaining. Yep. I like lightsabers instead of phasers. Sorry, but sorry.
It's all good.
I mean, it's just, I mean, I feel the same way about movies I do about music. It's just, these days, it's going downhill, and I don't know how it's going to recover, how it's going to get better. The only movies I am actually dying to see ever are maybe if Nicolas Cage puts out a new movie, because that new movie about all the girls having sex dreams about him, like, it looks hilarious. But
Dream Scenario, is that the
Dream
one
that's Scenario? That's it,
that
that's
looks
it.
Really good. Yeah,
I watched a lot of 2.5 Men on Tubi on Thanksgiving Day in America, and I saw a lot of ads for that movie. It looks hilarious.
It does look good.
I mean, Nicolas Cage is one of the few good actors that's still, like, putting out movies that's not comic book movies. Yeah. But even though he was just in The Flash, but I mean, I just there's not many movies besides comic book movies or like Star Wars movies. Other than that, there's not many movies coming out anymore that, like, I don't go to the theater anymore. One, because I have kids and my kids in the theater do not behave, so no. But And I don't have time besides that to go to the movie by myself or with friends anymore. So, I mean, I don't go, the last movie I saw in theaters, I'm pretty sure was Ant-Man Quantumania. And that's just because I had a day off from work and me and the wife decided to go see it while the kids were at school. But I mean, other than that, like if it's not a Marvel movie or a comic book movie, I really don't want to see it in theaters. I mean, back in 2019, I had the Regal Unlimited pass for a while and I was seeing a movie every week and it was great. I saw a lot of movies I never would have seen if I didn't do that. But some great ones. I can't think of them. Good Boys is definitely one of those because that was hilarious. But
it's a good one.
I mean, that's the thing. A lot of the best comedies come out nowadays have kids in them. Like, there are rated movies, but they have kids in them. And it's just like, where are we going in this world? That's the best comedy that I've seen come out lately. But I don't know. It's just, I feel like all the talent is going towards streaming services now for their TV shows, for their cartoons, the animated series they do. And well, I'm not against that at all, because I can watch from home and it's part of the subscription I already pay for. But I mean, I feel like movie theaters are eventually going to become a thing in the past. I really do feel that.
That's a shame. It really is. Yeah.
I don't think it is. I mean, yes, it's a whole industry of people that are trying to make money, but you know what? They don't hire that many people in movie theaters. Nick find other jobs, and I'm not too concerned about them. I mean, it doesn't mean less money for people making movies either, because Netflix will pay you a shitload of money for a good movie. So,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's just the way it's going, and the future is scary. Yeah, for a lot of reasons. Listen to Paranormal They're Normal for a lot of those reasons, but the future is scary, and movies are definitely a part of that. The change in movies has just been. You don't hear people saying, "Oh, I'm dying to go see this Friday," unless it's a Marvel movie or a DC movie or a Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
you are, or maybe Fast and Furious. So I fucking hate those movies. I don't even hear people say they want to see Fast and Furious anymore. Most people I know just say it's been enough. It's been enough. But
yeah, it's a really interesting time. I think this decade movies are gonna take a bit of a hit, and I think the industry is obviously changing. Cinemas are going to have to somehow adapt or just reinvent themselves completely. How they do that, I don't know. Hopefully we don't see them disappear altogether like video stores, because I still miss video stores.
I don't. I'd rather look through a freaking streaming service I pay for to find a movie I want to watch than or just Google and see where it's on.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 times it's going to be on some streaming service, or it's going to be available for rent on Amazon for like $3. Like Amazon is the new Blockbuster. I'm fine with that. But I mean, it means no having to drive out and go somewhere, which I'm fine with. But I mean, it's just, I don't know. Movies are going a dangerous way. And eventually, I mean, it's funny because the movies that come out the most every year is horror movies. Still, it's always, they're not all going to theaters. A lot of them are going to streaming exclusive, or they're going just to DVD. I don't know, DVD release is a thing anymore, really, but they're going to DVD release straight to DVD too. And I mean, but that's horror's the most producing brand, or producing genre, I guess, nowadays.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's the one constant genre, isn't it? It never goes away. Yeah.
I don't see any more really family friendly features that are not Disney movies or on Paramount Plus or something like that. Like, I don't see any family movies really going to theaters that often that are not animated. I don't see like live action family movies anymore. I don't see the Mrs. Doubtfire type comedies that were drama, like the com drums. Like, I don't see them anymore. Mm. Like, really. Like, and if you do, it's Tyler Perry's Madea and God Help Us All.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Things are different now than they were when I was a kid, when you were a kid. And I mean, I guess every adult goes through this path at some point in their life, but it's just scary.
Yeah. Watch this space, hey? Yeah, things are definitely changing. So, I don't know if we'll solve all those problems on this podcast, but we'll at least have the conversation and get people thinking differently and, you know, reconnect with the movies. Sure. Because, you know, I'm just biased. I mean, for me, it's always movies, always has been. And I hope they continue to thrive in whatever way that looks like. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
We're trying, damn it. We're trying to change.
Yeah, we're trying. We're not going to give up, you know. All right. Well, thank you, Jeremy, for coming on My Movie Story. This has been great. And, you know, sharing your knowledge and passion for these three different films. And, yeah, just getting people curious about films they may not have seen, or looking at a film from a different point of view. That's what this is all about, and you've done that really well. So, thanks for being with us today. We'll definitely share the links for Jeremy's podcast for anyone who wants to check out his breadth of work that he's doing. There's some really interesting stuff there. I had to listen to myself, so definitely check it out. So thanks, mate. Thank you for being on My Movie Story.
My pleasure, man, and we'll definitely be working together in the future at some point.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Jeremy. See ya.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.